That's the great arranger, composer, and band leader Oliver Nelson with Screamin' the Blues, the title track of his 1961 album. Oliver, of course, on tenor and alto sax, Eric Dolphy on bass, clarinet, and alto sax, Richard Williams on trumpet, Richard Wyons on piano, and George Duvivier on bass. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. We have a little glitch happening, but we are unable to reach George Webb. I think he gave me a different number for today, but if we don't get him anytime soon, we proceed and we can take this time and just elongate our free your mind discussions, because in the last 2 days, really, we have gotten we've gotten notice of so many developments, we don't know where to start. But we'll see. I want to talk about yesterday's program, and I know George is, he probably forgot that we will be using this number, but we've been calling, and the messages just go straight to voice, and we're not getting any answers. So we'll proceed with an additional Free Your Mind Thursday ahead of Free Your Mind Friday. And we'll come back to him whenever we work out which number should be used. All right, not a tragedy. I'm sure we'll hook up later and we'll get it all straightened out one way or the other. So the phone lines are open at 888-874-4888. Okay, I'm getting word from the engineer. We're not getting answers at the phone number we have for him today. All right, so we'll just proceed. It's not the end of the world. Okay, what did you learn about yesterday? We will continue to follow this story. And by the way, I just want to give ourselves a little pat on the back. You will notice that many of the stories that are breaking anew or just breaking were stories that we tackled a long time ago, right here. We said as recently as last week, we talked about the fact that the noose is beginning to tighten around the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation. And so it is. You can't do this kind of stuff for as long as they've been doing it, thinking that it will all go undetected and nothing will happen. And it seems that it's picking up steam. And we heard just yesterday that Hillary, at least, supposedly is hanging out as a kind of bait, the possibility of pleading guilty in exchange for some of the charges being dropped on at least the on Benghazi, and possibly even on the Clinton Foundation. Now, who is negotiating this, I don't know, but it is still early, very early to tell. But as of yesterday, we heard there's a possibility of some sort of negotiation that in exchange for dropping some of the, I mean, the damning charges against her, she will agree to plead guilty to something. So that she will have a kind of official pardon. That's what they're talking about essentially. When they say, "Well, we will agree to plead guilty to this and that," of course, this is typical in many cases where prosecutors, in order to get done with a case and to move on, sometimes they are inclined to agree to a plea deal. That's the prosecutor's office and the defense lawyers for whoever is in the spotlight. And they work out an arrangement where the person who is in the hot seat, the lawyers will put forward an idea that they hope that the prosecutors will go along with, which is they will say, well, he will plead guilty to a lesser charge of XYZ. And this is his way of trying to say, look, let's get this over with. There are other things that he wants to do and with his life. And this case is already 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 years in the making. Let's call it a day and move on. Yeah, well, this is not that kind of case. That's the first thing. And I don't know how a prosecutor could agree to basically negotiate around charges of this magnitude. But, you know, it's not impossible. We've seen this before. President Clinton himself had pardoned many people before he left office who had done grievous wrong and should have done serious time in jail, in prison. But they were friends of his, and this was one of the last things that he could do, that nobody could stop him. So he pardoned a whole bunch of people. Barack Obama also pardoned people. But I would say that the Clintons are a special case. The crimes they have committed and the crimes allegedly committed are so serious, so numerous, and so, in terms of the law, so flagrantly against the law. I just don't see how they could make any attempt at all at negotiating the possible conviction of and the terms of convictions of either of them. Now, here's where I had talked about the swamp and the sinkhole. There's a dilemma here. Donald Trump is mad as hell with the Clintons. Very, very angry about the Clintons. And speaks of the crimes that they are associated with and that they are alleged to have committed. As if, well, he sees them as treasonous. The more serious crimes are treasonous. And I believe so does Sessions. An interesting thing is happening between Trump and Sessions. And you see in recent, I'd say the last week or two, they're trying to patch things up, which is a clear signal that Trump needs Sessions in line with his thinking. They had a very serious falling out, very nasty, very open, and very embarrassing to the country. I think somebody got to Trump and said, listen, do whatever you have to do and just seal some kind of a deal with Jeff Sessions. He is your attorney general. It doesn't look good fighting with him. And if you had to make a choice as to who your greater enemy is, would it be Jeff Sessions or would it be the Clintons? Who would you say you despise more? And so I think they came to an understanding, Trump and Sessions, that the greater task here is to put the Clintons out, put their lights out, and get down to the business of getting an end to all of this, you know, dark stuff that was going on and in secret. And, well, are they going to do it or are they not going to do it? You have the Benghazi situation still unresolved and the role of Hillary Clinton. And this is part of what is the challenge here. They are the epicenter of major crimes involving dozens and dozens and dozens of people and involving crimes committed all over the world with more dozens and dozens of people. This is not an easy thing to dispose of. The Clintons are almost unique in the way they have gone about covering themselves by enmeshing others into the various plans that they proceeded with to make more and more and more money illegally. So this is a hard nut to crack. And when the U.S. was unwilling to move aggressively against them, we saw that it was the foreign governments that took up the case. And so they are sitting smack in the middle of one of the most complex prosecutions. If there is to be a prosecution, it is not going to be an easy thing to do, because this is how the swamp differs from the sinkhole. In the swamp, you just go in, you wrap whoever it is you're going after on the head, you throw them in a court, you get some convictions, and the case is done. In the sinkhole model, the Clintons draw into their circle of crime. This is how they operate. A lot of people, very important people, who, because they believed they shared a friendship with very influential people from the United States, and they, many of them innocently, many were innocent, because the sale to them was, we need this money to continue our good work. Well, who will want to turn down such an opportunity and be made to look like a real penny pincher? So they said, sure, here's some money. Here's $100 million. They have no idea, or it took a long time for the idea to dawn on them, that they have been brought into a circle of criminal conduct. And to undo it is easier said than done. So I'm intrigued by how this is going to be handled, the prosecution of the Clintons and their activities with respect to the Clinton Foundation, because it actually is a global prosecution and very, very complicated. On the other hand, the prosecution bodies in various parts of the world that will have to handle this prosecution themselves will have to dig a lot deeper to find out what is the best way to handle a prosecution like this. Hundreds of billions of dollars were donated by entities in Europe. The laws might be different there. They may have a better shot of trying to negotiate something of a pardon, but they would have, I think, a better shot, because they still know so many people in the system, because they placed them there in the event that, you know, things would come to this. And they will be able to tap into those people that they had placed in strategic positions. But will it be enough now to give them any kind of protection? We don't know. This is a very interesting case. And this is why we took such care to not only follow the money. Charles Ortel led the way on this. And he is absolutely certain that the law is not on their side. He's got the evidence. He spent about 2 years already so far looking at their own records and the government's records. The government in many ways is embarrassed because all these things went on under its own nose. So I'm very thankful that he selected this program to be very, very detailed about what he has uncovered. I'm sure it's going to play a major role in the prosecution of this case, if it in fact results in a prosecution. But in any event, he's got tons and tons and tons of records and data and evidence that will, if this case comes to trial, the presentation of these materials will do them in, no question about it. And on the other hand, foreign governments themselves have relied on the information he has supplied to do their own further investigation and consideration of prosecutions. And there are many foreign governments looking at this. So that would give us a measure of justice, but it's not going to come anytime soon. What could come soon is this initial prosecution, and there's a series of them, as you know, having to do with access or pay-to-play operations that she was running while she was Secretary of State. So that's an issue. We have the question of where's the money? Where did the money go? That's a huge issue. We have flagrant violation of charity law and tax law. That's not going to go away anytime soon. And we have violations of ethics laws all over the place by the Clintons, and they continue to do it. This is the interesting thing about these folks. You would think that being in such a precarious position, you'd watch yourself, but they continue life as they know it and as they want it. But the hammer is about to be brought down on them, and the first sign is the Clintons raising this idea about pleading guilty to perhaps much lesser charges in every instance, and that in exchange for a promise never to do such bad things again, and they'll make the case that they did it all with good intention, and some things just didn't work out the way they wanted them to. You know, the customary defenses. But they're good people caught in a bad situation. So we'll see. Lincoln from Mount Vernon, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you, Eugene?
I'm hanging in. How about you?
I am persevering.
You what?
Hello? I'm persevering.
You're persevering. Well, that's good.
Yeah. It's a positive way of saying I'm hanging in.
Oh, yes, I gathered. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's a good thing.
Let's hope that George was not assassinated.
Who?
The person who you were supposed to have on today.
Oh, yes. No, he. I don't believe anything of
no,
that nature has happened. I just think he mixed up his own numbers and gave us a number for when he is on the road. Yeah. And he probably is on the road, but
yes,
forgot
because
that...
anyone who speaks of anything related to the Clintons usually end up committing suicide.
No, not this guy.
You know what I'm saying? That, ironically speaking, they didn't commit suicide, but that's what we hear.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's your contribution today? What are we talking about today?
This is very complicated. The whole thing is very complicated, actually. And one of the things I think is why a lot of us are missing the boat is that we talk about all these people as if any of them are noble. On all sides, none of them are noble. And most people, as we see, they enter into politics for self-aggrandizement. Obama, the Clintons, you know, everybody is looking for something, self-gain, and it has nothing to do with the people's needs. And because of that, they're all guilty of something, and they're all venal. They're all capable of being bribed because of self-interest. And I think that there's a big complication going on. Like, the George Soros factor is still very much at work, and the George Soros, along with the Clinton, and also to still the overthrow of Trump is still very, very much alive. And then we have Trump, who is there trying to survive, and so he's doing a lot of irrational things, like saying he wants to bomb Korea, and we saw signs of that with the mother of all bombs, etc. And I think that one of the things we're missing is that everyone involved is very childish, and I'm saying the Democrats and the Republicans, to the extent that America is literally on a suicidal course, and it is all about self-interest. They will actually take the whole world down because of what their pride and what they're trying to gain financially, etc. You know, I mean, like, we're on the verge of a possible third world war, and this is all due to selfish acts by everyone, including Obama, because he's still working with the Clintons behind the scene. I mean, even the fact of this Russian narrative that they keep pushing, which they know is a big lie, and such a stupid, childish lie. And what happened is, we see a lot of them are hiding behind diplomacy. See, Trump comes out, and Trump is very crass, so it's obvious that he's childish. But when you have someone like in the the people from the DNC making fancy speeches, and they're sounding intellectual, etc., it conceals their childish effort. I mean, and I'm saying, when you're risking blowing up the whole world just for some little petty thing about Hillary not winning, etc., it indicates how that there's a combination of childishness and evil and self-centeredness. And I just want to put that out there for anyone else who want to broaden upon what I presented.
Okay, but I want to ask you a question in return. Uh-huh. I want to ask, let's say you have a pretty decent mapping of the situation, you know, much of it hinging on the psychology of the individuals in places of leadership. What then does this compel you to do? Is it enough to understand or to come to some understanding of the situation? What are you feeling compelled to do, having studied the situation and come to the conclusions that you have? Now, where do you go? What do you do?
This is where we go. First of all, we must demystify things. And if people demystified all these things and stop seeing government in an abstract way rather than a concrete way, and also seeing it as a bunch of personalities, and if we can become objective, for example, no matter what you tell people about the Clintons, there's a man who works at this store, and he knows someone who knows the Clintons. And this man, he's actually from, I forgot, I'm not going to say, because I'll be revealing too much. This particular man, one of his relatives knows the Clinton and knows Hillary in particular, all right? They were able to get into this country because of something Hillary did, all right? And this man, when I tell him all the things about the Clintons, no matter what I show him, he will vouch for the Clintons because of this favor that was done to his one of his relatives, okay? And there are other people who are just like and black people, we suffer from this, you know, good white people kind of mentality, you know, like one white person does something good, and so because of that, or they impress you. Like from the time Bill Clinton went on Arsenio Hall's show, black people was completely duped. I remember I was
but
at a
you,
bank.
But you're not answering my question. I asked you a question pertaining directly to you, and you're taking me, Lincoln, I'm afraid to say you're taking me on a scenic route here.
Okay, let me come to the cul-de-sac then. but in other words, what I'm saying is then, we must, there's only one thing for us, the first thing we have to do is to present to people what really is going on. And if you can't educate the people and make them understand what really is going on, there is no way forward, because otherwise you will not have the people supporting you. You have to actually...
But I asked you about you. I asked you about you in particular, specifically. You've given a pretty broad view, and much of it is right on point. And the way you analyze the situation, fine. I'm asking you now, recognizing that you have what I consider to be a superior understanding of things, what does that now impel you to do about, you know, you see things in a different way, you have a very astute analysis of what is going on with the people? Well, you are one of the people, and I thought that you could bring us really closer to understanding how you, as an individual, with this level of understanding, what does it compel you to do?
Let me break it down. I'm a total rebel, and I'm a rebel with a cause. And the way I live in this world and in America, it's like this. I see this country and most of what's going, I see this country as an illegal government, especially since they took this land from the Native Americans. And so what I do is I try to impart as much as I can to others when I actually figure something out. But I know, like a preacher, you can share knowledge and information with people, but you cannot force them to drink. Now, I am existing in this world partially as with the mentality of survival, but survival not at anyone's expense. I actually also have political interest, and if I could garner certain things like money, etc., I would actually go back to Jamaica and try to set up a government that would be an example of how the world should function. And it would be a government that would liberate the people from poverty, etc. But outside of that, I am still like a journalist. A journalist will bring to you the facts, but what else can the journalist do? And then, you know, there are certain private things that we do that we may not necessarily be able to expose to everyone. And that is where I stand on all these issues.
All right. Well, thank you. A very good and reasonable conversation. Thanks. I just wanted to illustrate the point using myself. I'm a very political person in the sense that I look at how the systems of government are operating, the ways in which they are basically hurting people, the ways in which they are ineffective, the ways in which they are attempting to create beneficial change and so forth. I became very disillusioned about it. And like you, I felt that the government, the purpose of government was lost a long time. There's no real inclusion. There's no intent to bring about real inclusion. I left the party and I stopped voting because I didn't see that there was going to be much progress and I would be essentially allowing an ineffective system to waste my time. And more than 20 years ago, I stopped voting. I said, this is an insult to myself and to people who really and truthfully are trying to do something better. And instead turned my attention to getting some other things done in a different way. I refuse to subject myself to the frustration of what is proudly called a great democracy. It's not, in my view. So that's what I did. I'm out. Now, I'm in a way, because I watch how the system is responding and working and how people, depending on their level of understanding, how they too are responding and working with a system that is fraught with frustration and fraud. I just can't deal with that. So my approach is get out. The Democratic Party is useless, utterly useless. And I hate to use the word, but it's an immoral system. And I look at how enthusiastic people are in embracing this kind of immorality. No, you put your energy in something else where you can make a positive contribution that allows people to improve their quality of life. So that's the way I did it. I think we all should think about politics this way. It's not about who's winning and who's losing. It's about whether these people are people you want to invite into your home, whether these values are the values you will promote in your home. And if the answer is no, be emphatic about it. Don't dilly-dally and hope and pray. Nothing is changing. So you don't change the system, you change you. You change your views of the system, your reaction to the system, your participation in developing something else. Now, if people did that across the country, what a change that would be. Think about that. Thanks, Lincoln. Willie from Brooklyn, you're on the air. Willie, are you there?
Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Willie. We're getting a lot of interference on your line.
Oh, I'm on the plantation.
It's very, very hard to hear you. Okay, try that. Habu from Wisconsin, you're on the air.
I just put it on because I'm not going to try.
Hello, Willie. Are you there?
Yes. Yes, go ahead. Yes, yes, yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Papa, I was here. I'm not trying to disrespect you or my audience. But you were. Yes. Yes. I am not trying to disrespect you or my family. But you did say, mention that name, Abbas. So I think it's a wonderful name. And I like that name for you. Not out of box.
It's hard. I'm trying to get a clear sound on your end.
What about now?
Yes.
Okay. So, as a term of endearment, I must respectfully say, Papa, because I like that. How's the arm? You see?
Yes, it's coming along. I've had to have another small adjustment to it. There are two plates in my arm, and they have shifted. They're connected to rods, so they have to just readjust the positioning of them. I need somebody else's arm that is in good working order. But I'm told it's just a minor thing. But it involves just realigning the plates and the rods.
Let me say this. I personally want to thank you, because I could just imagine you doing the work that you're doing. We just want to arm. I got two and I can do this. I could just think that the other day, I twisted one of mine a little bit, and I couldn't do anything with you. So I personally want to thank you so much. And the work that you've done with the Clinton Foundation, as far as the people that is with Sister Hillary, I'm here. Well, they don't know. They don't know who she is. And the only reason why that happened is because we failed, my PRN family. Because if we were doing the kind of work you're doing with one arm, everybody in America would be listening to PRN and sending some money to support it.
Well, the money to support it is a very good idea, because frankly, operations like this that are independent still must pay for those necessary things that are required to be on air. Simply because we call the Progressive Radio Network doesn't mean that we don't need money. We do. So I encourage people all the time to, if you can, make a strong effort to send some money. The bills still have to be paid. The phone bill still has to be paid. The office, the studio still has to be paid for. So there's a lot of stuff that is resting on Gary's personal resources. And yes. We really can't have it that way. We do have a responsibility to support the station financially. So I always ask people to keep that in mind so that we can continue having conversations and continue our peer-to-peer learning and education. And it's a very, very valuable resource, I can tell you that. So thank you for the suggestion. It's great. And I hope hear what you say.
Let me say this. It won't cost most of us any money, because the money that we send to the cable company to give us fake news, I just cannot understand this. Why would you pay these people to insult your intelligence and your decency? It doesn't make sense. I just can't wrap that around my brain, because I'm not too bright myself. But it just don't make no sense to me. My friends that have television, whenever they see me coming, they say, turn it off, because I'm going to jump all over them. Yes. Now, may I respectfully say this? You are the most anti-Semitic, racist person I know, and Gary knows. Last week, Thursday, you did a thing on immigration. I thought I was listening to Minister Farrakhan. because you were giving us the naked truth, which you always give us the truth, but you dressed it up. It's always dressed up. But last week, Thursday, you gave us the naked truth. And I couldn't believe what I'm hearing. I said, am I listening to this rock? I thought, yeah. But so I want to thank you for that program. Now, I totally disagree with you on we're allowed to disagree. I disagree with Gary and Thursday. But I work for him every day. Usually spend programs on PRN. Everybody in my contact gets a program because I listen to your program and his program twice a day on the plantation and when I get home alone and start taking notes.
On the plantation. Oh my goodness.
I am on the plantation. What do you want me to do?
Well, I understand it. But it's just, but, you know, in the middle of all of this, you have to have a sense of humor because it keeps you going. It really does. If we were only to concentrate on what we're fighting, we would be a bunch of very unhappy people. We still have to find a way to laugh a little bit. So I chuckled when you called it the plantation. It's funny, but it's absolutely true. It's true. It is the plantation.
And people who begin to listen, because you have to beat them over the head a little bit. Did you listen, Gary? You know, and so forth. Because you got to constantly stay on people. Eventually, you know what's going to happen? People will begin to listen. This is how. I have no interest in what the so-called mainstream media does. That's the least of my concern. Because I don't listen to it. If there's one thing about that so-called president, he did say, he did point out to America, that, oh, you listen to them, that's it. That's the absolute truth. Now, with Sister Hillary, I have no interest in what they do. What I'm interested in is what we are doing.
Okay. And that's what I've been asking and talking about for a long time. It's good to get an understanding, but let's face it. We understood Trump even before he got into office. So he's a known entity to us. The issue is we don't need to use too much more time trying to psychoanalyze this man. What we need to do is to use that time to figure out how we will survive despite him. That's what we need to do. But we give so much attention to try to analyze, we know that he's got problems.
The only time I hear a little bit of what they're saying and what they're doing is when on your show or Gary's show, because you play clips from them, speaking. So that's the only, but I have no interest in it. Now, you said that you don't vote. From my vantage point, I think you're in error. Here's why. Look, remember Hillary, she made Obama denounce Minister Farrakhan. Now, wait a second. What are you doing? What are you doing? Here's a man that has worked 63 years of his life for African people. And point me to one lie, one thing as evil he has done to anyone, and you could have my neck. You could have my neck. Because he's not, from my vantage point, he's not to be listened to. He's to be studied. And by the way, while we are on it, I know you control Congress. I know you control the monetary system. I know you control the media. So, and I know you now control, because you did a program on the so-called president, his grandfather. So I know who he is. So you have control of the White House. I don't know what's going to happen. But what I do know is you're going to make a move on him. But let me tell you this. You see, once you make that move on him, God will make a move on America. It's the whole world. From my study of that brother, you know, God himself, through nature, just watch the weather. I do know that there's climate change. I do know about chemtrail. I do know all these things. But if I'm watching the weather, these are just signs. These are just signs because I know you're planning. So when you make that move, the whole world will know who God is from my vantage point. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Hello, you see?
I'm listening.
No wonder, as far as you not voting, I think that's totally incorrect. Here's why. Look, I vote every year, but not who they told me to vote for. No wonder we got burned. We don't know who Bernie Sanders. We didn't know Bernie was working for the DNC. We didn't know that. But we put all our hopes in him. What if we had a club that we said, just try out, which we don't need every month or every week, a political club, just in case we need money, we haven't done our work, because if we do our work like we're supposed to, PRN would be a source of information, because we know it's reliable, we know it's truthful, and we know there's nothing but integrity behind it. And we set up a club that we send money for, like a PAC group. No, we're not going to tell Gary yet, but come the next election, guess who we're running for president? You have to be. You have to run, because if Gary was, and I know we don't want him to, but he has to do it, because he is an angel. And imagine us having Gary running. Number one, he would not have anyone running against him, because you have no integrity. We know who you are. You've talked about swamp and sinkholes. Well, I thank you for that program, but there's also another hole. In the Caribbean, many years ago, before we had outside holes. You see what I'm saying? Where they're distant in that hole. You dig a hole in the back of your house. In the south, not in the cities. They still have those holes. It's called, I will say that on to disrespect my family. But there's that kind of hole. That one you left out. That's where Trump is at.
Oh my goodness. Well, I needed to hear from you today, because you presented your very solemn ideas with great humor. I do appreciate that so much, because very few people have that knack, by the way, to say something that is very serious in a humorous way. It doesn't diminish the seriousness of what it is you're saying. It makes it more accessible. And it comes to people listening to you in a more human way. And it may not register immediately, but somewhere in the course of your day, you say, I heard this guy on PRN, and what he said is really true. I mean, a simple thing like saying I'm on the plantation. and how so many automatically understand that. But you're doing your bit to earn a living, and you're grinning and bearing it. You're tolerating many indignities, but you are proceeding with the larger imperative of earning a living and taking care of your family and its needs. So there's a lot to what you say, and people have to listen at several different levels. And that's why I laugh a lot when you call. I'm not laughing at you. I'm reacting to...
I have no interest whether you laugh at me or not. Because when
I've been laughing with you, Willie.
I have tape of you when you were at WBI. Tape. So when you listen to PRN, Dr. Ben, all these people, people don't want to hear the truth. I understand that. So they go call you all kinds of names. There's anything about you. That's negative. But as long as you are around me, what I have found, what Gary has created, I mean, he could lead me into hell. Because he's an honorable, we wouldn't have you if it wasn't for Gary and others too. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So why not have somebody like that we, as a history, he has some guy come lately, that's your talk. You don't have a history of being we knew nothing about him, of being a good human being. But if we decide, we know Gary, we know his record, he may not want to go. We don't have to tell him yet. But next election, President, guess who we're sending? We're sending you. And if America gets to know who this person is, he'll win this election, hands down.
I want to forewarn you. People have been asking me to be involved in politics in a more concrete way and to run for office. And my standard response is, I am running from office. Okay? So I'm running from office.
I have found what I like to do.
This is my space. I like it. I enjoy it, and I am happy with what I do.
I know you're happy, but can't you see these guys are leading us into hell?
Well, it's like digging a hole to fill a hole, and politics has turned me off for a very, very long time, and I don't want any part of.
No. I'm not saying you should run. We made Gary president of the United States, and guess who was the Secretary of State? Imagine what a difference this country would make around the world.
I think he would respond by saying the same thing I'm saying. He has found value in what he does. And because he has found value in what he does, he gives even more of himself so that people can elevate their standard, not just of living, but of thinking. And that is his function. And so everybody has a niche. You have a niche. Other people have their own little place where they can function best. And if you are lucky enough to have reached such a place, I mean, you're a winner. You have scored the perfect points. And the problem is, you know, like we have a guy who builds hotels and whatnot. Stay in that lane and you'll be happy. But no, he's now president and we're very, very unhappy. And so will he, because he's not going to last out his term. But by the time he goes, he would have done so much damage. What he needed from the very beginning was years before he even thought about elective office. He should have taken himself someplace to defrag his brain, to become a human being, to understand what it is to be truly human. He needed that kind of education. He doesn't have it. He doesn't know how to love.
There are people.
He doesn't know. We don't need him. We don't need him in office.
I know that, but just the presence of there are so many honorable, decent people within, because I listen very, very well. There's so many other good, beautiful people. Imagine Wolf, Professor Wolf. Imagine him being outside, whatever it was. Imagine people like Wolf, like of that caliber. Honorable, decent people that will not lie, deceive, and rob the American people. What country this will be, to, not only to us, to the world. You see what I'm saying?
So we do need that. I would endorse that view. We need more than ever. We need some decency. We need honorable people. People who understand what the human condition is. We have had some of those, but not nearly enough. Not nearly enough. Willie, was great talking with you today. And I thank you for keeping me on point. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it so much.
I'm privileged to talk to you and my family. And I love Harvey. He does all such a wonderful time. Every time he calls, he got so much information. I thank you, my sister. You have a safe, a beautiful evening, all right?
Thank you. Thanks, you too. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. Now, we may do one of two things tomorrow. I'm hoping that we can get George Webb, and we would untangle this little accident that we had today, because I know he is desperately eager to come back and finish up the story which he began telling yesterday, which was just amazing. And so that is one of the things that could happen. Hopefully he's in good shape. But I think he just gave me the wrong number. He probably gave me a number for when he's traveling or that he uses for something else. And we weren't able to connect with him today. But one way or the other, we'll rectify that. Or if we don't get him tomorrow, we'll just do our regular Free Your Mind Friday part two. So those are the options for tomorrow. But thanks for listening today and contributing today. Stay tuned. Coming up next, the NDC Savings Club. Is it? Yes. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. And as always, a pleasure and a great privilege and a lot of fun being in your company. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.